Hey everybody, Ryan Krause here. It's been a while, but I can see from the numbers that a ton of podcast listeners are still enjoying the Cold Case Murder Mysteries catalog of past episodes, so I'm stopping by to ask for your help with a difficult situation I'm facing in life. As some of you are already aware, I recently found myself forced into homelessness by a series of incredibly damaging incidents that were beyond my control. No, it isn't a sad story of somebody falling into a deadly addiction or outright losing his mind, but is instead the product of a word most people don't like to see or hear. They want it hidden away and silenced forever. A scary little word that gets even the most empathetic people to clam up. Abuse. Just so that there's no confusion, I'm going to quickly document what happened and then update you on where that has put me today so that we have a clear portrait of what occurred, where it left me, and how we can heal this wound with a strong sense of community and compassion. Before making Cold Case Murder Mysteries, I had been an aspiring screenwriter who wrote entertaining scripts that got attention for being unique and innovative in a similar way as this show, but they weren't necessarily commercially viable, so I would get a lot of managers and/or executives saying, "Hey, I liked it or I loved it, but do you have anything that is commercial in a way that it might sell, or even in a way that we could sell people on you as a writer?" And I really didn't, because that was my style. So I was stuck in that limbo of getting people interested and having them bring me to the doorstep, but I never quite got invited inside past all those gatekeepers in a meaningful way. When that happens, sometimes you have to ask yourself what you need to do in the context of taking a chance that will lead to a breakthrough. What scares you, but might actually help? That's what you need to answer, because the breakthrough lies within that wisdom. Like most writers, I love the idea of being this invisible entity behind the page, one that never had to perform, so to speak, because it's where I was most comfortable. I didn't want to be an actor. I didn't want to be seen or heard beyond the implications of what was in the script. On the other hand, I recognize the value of being seen and heard, specifically in the sense that, if you build it, they will come. You'll be more visible. So I did that. I decided that I would make a podcast, and that would preclude the issue of not being able to distribute my work. Then, if they could hear me and see me, or my talent, then they would come knocking. I found a way to turn the silence of the page into words on a microphone. Is that what I wanted to do? No. Do I like speaking into a microphone? No. Yet when I built it, when I took the chance, they came. Unfortunately, the thing you need to understand about the well-known entertainment industry people who found me is that it wasn't actually those people at all. It was always a woman in the life of that person who discovered me and then subsequently got the man or men in question interested in learning more. However, what do we know about women, especially in relationships? What are they known for, among many other things, but in connection to men? Changing men, right? If a woman deems any aspect of a man deficient in terms of her definition of being a man, she will often attempt to get the guy to level up. It's perfectly normal. So, when these women went to these men and said, "You need to hear this guy, he's brilliant," undoubtedly the first thing they realized is that I was going to be something that exemplified what was missing in them. Plus, if these men were already so problematic yet successful, it was going to spell abuse for those working with them, and especially people with no leverage. Accordingly, the first of these people to contact me was known alcoholic abuser Dan Harmon, the co-creator of Rick and Morty. Dan invited me to the offices of that show to spend a week in the writer's room as a guest and said he would be there all week. I was excited to learn from the best. Now, unbeknownst to me at the time, that was not only a lie, but a hilarious one at that. The truth is that Dan never made it to work on Monday. He was drunk at home and then drunk at the local dive bar. The same thing happened Tuesday. On Wednesday, he showed up for 10 minutes, angry, hungover, and smelling like booze, and then left to go back to the dive bar. As I realized my ability to engage with him would be severely limited, I asked for simply 2 minutes of his time at the end of the week. He said he would be in the office on Friday to talk to me, and never showed. Can you guess why? He was drunk at the local dive bar. Now, for those of you who aren't aware, my entire childhood was smashed to bits by an alcoholic mother who was completely out of control. All of this disappointment Dan was dealing me was traumatic to begin with. No, it's not abuse, but the terrible thoughts and feelings from my youth came raging back to life in those moments. So, he never arrived to offer me advice. And that's when I got a call inviting me to join him at the local dive bar. While there, I obviously asked for his advice, specifically what I should do moving forward to earn a staff writing job on a show, aside from the obvious part about continuing to write. His answer, verbatim, was, "Do nothing. Just keep on working on your podcast because I'm bringing you on for season 6. Of course, he meant season 6 of Rick and Morty, and the writer's room for that season would have been starting about 8 months after that time. He even referred to me getting the quote-unquote golden ticket on his live podcast, Harmontown, like I was Charlie in the fucking chocolate factory, insinuating that I struck gold with this easy path into the industry. Please, I had been struggling for years and had more than earned that opportunity. The easy overnight success is almost always a myth. The truth is that they couldn't see you struggling down in the darkness of the abyss for so long. They see you as someone who just started a podcast and got really lucky. Anybody listening right now who's an artist knows that's complete bullshit. I endured so many rejections before meeting Dan, some of which were close calls and others which were embarrassing failures, but it lasted years. And then, in that one moment, with Dan's offer, the pain of that seemingly never-ending plight was washed away. I should have been ecstatic to hear this news, and I should have thanked him profusely. So, of course, I was, and I did. But afterward, I interjected with a quick question, just because I know the line to write on Rick and Morty goes around the block and halfway across the world. I asked, "Isn't that going to piss someone off? I mean, if all the writers on a show can fit at a single table, undoubtedly there's a game of musical chairs going on here in which some people are going to get left out." Dan glared at me with mean eyes like it wasn't even a legitimate question, but I knew it was when he shrugged to basically say, "I don't care, I'll do what I want because I'm the boss." It was made clear to me that I had earned this opportunity by making a difference in his life, but even more so in the life of his sidekick on Harmontown, Spencer, who was really benefiting from considering the insights I divulged here on a regular basis. I took that leap because I needed to make something big happen in my life, which made it so amazing when it seemed I was going to fly instead of fall. But that would soon change. After 8 months passed, Dan presented me with some internal political nonsense that amounted to exactly what I had anticipated and was the reason I questioned him about offering me a job without telling anyone else until the time came to hire new staff writers. It became an issue to invite me onto that season, and Dan suggested they were probably going to make me a bad offer to prevent me from accepting, at which point I received another call shortly thereafter revealing the truth, which is that I wouldn't be getting an offer at all, and the reasons were complete bullshit. I was absolutely devastated emotionally, and even more so financially, because it led to my car getting repossessed. Imagine thinking you're going to be working on Rick and Morty in LA with a staff writer's salary, and then learn at the last minute the job is gone, and the guy who promised it has actually turned his back on you completely after texting the words, "I feel like I still owe you an opportunity." Right. I never heard from him again. When I tried to contact him, there was only silence. The pandemic began a couple weeks later, so you might imagine that my job prospects were absolutely destroyed, especially being in Phoenix without a car. Now, for somebody who endured his childhood getting demolished by an alcoholic, one who eventually killed herself and left the body for me to find, you might imagine how I felt when I spent my entire adulthood attempting to recover by finding success as a paid artist, only to have this happen. I worked for years to overcome the fallout of my mother's alcoholism and suicide and to build an adult life along my chosen career path, which is obviously a difficult endeavor to accommodate. But I did it. I climbed that mountain, reached the peak, and got knocked down by an alcoholic abuser. The irony is just too much to bear. This is a man who absolutely terrorized a woman on his writing staff for the show Community because she refused to reciprocate his desperate love. If you think he learned a lesson from that incident, think again. Yes, he offered an extensive apology on his podcast to save his career, but just listen to the following details in the context of a woman not loving him enough, and you can see the guy's emotional wound from a million miles away. We met for the first time at a restaurant. After the meal, as we were getting up to leave, our server, who was an attractive young woman, was finishing her shift and sitting down at the bar for a drink. She engaged us as we walked past, and we stopped. Dan responded to her with something funny. She laughed, and then responded to us, at which point I said something that made her laugh harder at my joke than at Dan's. He immediately looked enraged, face blushed, and I am not embellishing this in any way, literally stepped forward and in front of me so that my entire body would be blocked from this woman's view. He's about 3 inches taller than I am, so he was able to erase my existence to deal with the pain of this woman thinking someone else was funnier in that moment. He couldn't take it. But that's the problem. I'm that person. I talk to women. It's what I do well. And it's why the universe sent me to this motherfucker. Picture yourself as this guy for a moment. He's somewhat famous, and in his own words, has a six-figure per week income. He also lives in a mansion and rarely has to do any work of any kind, even when he's scheduled to show up. Imagine yourself as that person and needing to destroy someone like me to feel like you're worthwhile and that you matter. After taking that leap of faith and believing I'd grown wings through hard work, change, and appropriate risks, an alcoholic came back into my life to clip those wings off, and I went into a free fall. I could see that whatever financial woes I had were going to become much worse and place me in some truly compromising positions. I made a call to my audience, a plea to anyone who might be in the entertainment industry and be able to connect me to someone with a bit more empathy. Good Lord, careful what you wish for, right? I was contacted by a listener whose husband is the president of a prominent movie studio, and she said they'd like to introduce me to some of their friends. It sounded so exciting. They genuinely seemed like decent people. Soon enough, after having a phone call with the husband from the movie studio, I was invited to stay in their guest house at their home in LA. Shortly after getting there, however, it dawned on me that I wasn't simply there to meet their friends. The woman who invited me was actually looking to get into the industry as a producer and believed helping me could be her ticket to having a show made. Obviously, I wasn't the least bit opposed to this idea, but I had one serious question that kept nagging me. If her husband was the president of a large movie studio, which he legitimately was and is, then why the hell was she banking on me as her access to success? I didn't know the answer and felt awkward asking, so I let it be, assuming her husband just wasn't exactly the nice guy he pretended to be. Accordingly, days later, after their dog made it abundantly clear that he preferred me to them and wanted to abandon them to stay in the guest house with me, I saw this man outside teaching the dog to stay away from the guest house, or you could say, to stay away from me. I was horrified. I thought I was seeing things. I was like, no, he can't possibly be doing this, but he was. A person was teaching his dog to not like me so much anymore. Instead of asking himself why his dog was favoring me and his wife couldn't use him as access to the entertainment industry. Now again, I think I'm in this place to meet multiple people, but in truth, it's just one, who is obviously the one friend the wife believes can most easily get a show to air. I don't blame her for thinking this way, but at the same time, the person they knew who most closely fit that profile was Brian Fuller, the creator of the TV show Hannibal, who just so happens to be a guy who is known for one thing, getting fired from shows, and he gets fired a lot because he is very difficult to deal with. Now, instead of talking about abuse here, we're talking about getting fired because, again, if you are not the entity with leverage, then you are not the person who can be abusive. So if he is abusive, he's going to get fired. But when that situation changes and he brings somebody like me into his life, well, look who has the leverage. And that's the point. So anyhow, this woman was right about the content that I make being a great fit for the content that Brian makes. Brian makes gorgeous facades, some of the best in the business, and has a true talent for exterior considerations, but in terms of substance, he has none. Now, Brian endured a childhood in which he was beaten and sexually abused, a childhood which he claims he left behind easily because his father's abuse wasn't a big deal. But as soon as I engaged him in this creative endeavor, I was immediately placed into an abusive cycle in which he projected his powerful father onto himself, making me the child victim, and the woman with whom we were working, the mother caught in between. It was disgusting. It lasted for the better part of a year and was the most unbelievably damaging psychological abuse I could possibly imagine. Dan Harmon is a saint in comparison to Brian Fuller. Brian is by far the worst human being I've ever met. I mean, he did so much damage to my life. We began our project in August of that year, and by October, my eyes were showing the 1,000-yard stare back at me in the mirror. I could see it in the eyes of the woman we were working with, too. It was so sad. I confronted her about Brian on many occasions, but whatever that wound was that had her desperately running toward the money kept her right in place, thinking of nothing but the money. Her husband, who was a close friend of Brian's, actually gave me a nearly hour-long speech right in front of his wife about how terrible of a person Brian is. He stopped about every 10 or 15 minutes to interject with something positive about Brian as a means of offsetting the damage, but his wife was absolutely mortified. She didn't want me to hear it. She didn't want me to know. I thought, damn, I should back out of this right now. But of course, this man had intentionally waited until right after I committed to enlighten me about this truth. So that look of disappointment on the woman's face got me. She looked crushed. She was a divorced and remarried mother of three and clearly was in a marriage geared more toward money than love. So it became obvious that she was going to try to push ahead no matter the cost to anyone. Unfortunately, I was the person who ended up suffering. Even though a great studio said yes to a combined live-action and animation project helmed by the team of Brian Fuller and Ryan Krause, and wanted to give us $150,000 to produce a preview of the animation called a sizzle reel, Brian did everything he could to sabotage the project. It was a simple, easy yes that he turned into a perpetual no with his influence, and as the executives wondered what the hell had gone wrong, Brian continued to assert that they were the problem. They weren't. I was not either. The truth is that Brian wants and needs vice-like control over everything, thus getting fired all the time, and will not compromise when it comes to being in charge. I was fine with that, and so was everybody else, but being a respectful and deferential person doesn't help when it comes time for the writing to get done. At that point, upon crafting the script for the pilot, we needed to have both the style Brian brings and the substance he lacks, which I have, which was perfectly fair and normal because that was the idea behind the show in the first place. Brian is known for creating appearances, beautiful ones, and sometimes the beauty of ugliness. And I'm known for profound insights revealing truth, which is essentially the emotional version of what he does. Those elements are a great match, but if you're a controlling abuser who needs to do everything and have no substance, then it won't be there when you try. And that's what happened. Brian insisted upon being me in a situation in which I'm so unique, he created a mountain he couldn't climb. I remember the exec in charge of this company's TV slate looking at us with complete bewilderment and trying to convey that the depth and insights of the podcast were mysteriously missing in the scripts we turned in. Not just once, but each time until the process got caught in the same abusive cycle Brian was facilitating on the other side with me. He was doing it to them, too. Everybody got caught in this thing. He even called this man after our last meeting to complain about how the other exec present seemed to be laughing at us and suggesting the script we turned in would never sell. Well, of course she was laughing at us because she was right. Everybody knew that, even Brian, who was in denial. He did absolutely everything he could to sabotage that project because it didn't offer 100% control. He was actually going to have to let me write and contribute, and people were going to appreciate what I do. He didn't want that. He would not have it. He just wanted his name on something of substance related to true crime and horror to legitimize his flashy facade. But he was incapable of producing it without me, which precluded the project from happening. I was cycled through his lies and gaslighting for close to a year. In the end, just like Dan Harmon, he went back to being successful and wealthy and living in a big house, whereas I got sent back into the workforce with a murder podcast and two failed Hollywood projects as my latest experience. It's not exactly conducive to getting hired in the corporate world, or anywhere else for that matter. And since that time, I have suffered the terrifying fallout of these collective abuses in a way that has left me homeless. there are only so many times a wealthy person can knock you down before you can't get back up financially. And that was me. It is me. Right now. I'm homeless. I'm suffering. I'm an abuse victim. Those aren't labels I want to carry with me to certify my victimhood. To the contrary, this is simply the truth, one that I believe the better part of my audience needs to hear in order to comprehend the severely detrimental financial and psychological burden that was placed upon me by abusers. This is my rock bottom. Even though I did everything I could to prevent it, I saw it coming from a mile away. If you're wealthy and influential and can use access to the entertainment industry as the carrot in front of the horse's nose, well, you have the freedom to play with other people's lives. If you want them to drown, then they will. And I did. But the best thing I can do is continue to be that person and do it even better, symbolically undergoing rebirth on an emotional level, and specifically because their fear tells me I'm doing something so well that they needed to bury it. They needed it to disappear. They wanted it to stop. And I don't need to define what it is, because Dan Harmon did it for me. On stage during his live podcast, Harmontown, during one of two appearances I made, he told the audience that he was at home earlier in the day and heard a noise like there was someone on the stairs below him, which led him to think it was me. Now, of course, in the context of my true crime podcast, he was insinuating that I was coming up the stairs to get him, and that made for a good joke. In reality, however, on an emotional level, I'm that dude. If I enter your life, I'll normally precipitate some type of uncomfortable change that you've been avoiding. I never push people to change. I never criticize or judge, but they know from my work what's going on in my head and feel the pressure. So Dan was daydreaming about me coming up the stairs to get him, which was an implicit suggestion that I was going to push him to climb higher, to be a better man. If he had that vision in his imagination, then it is a fact that it was projected from his emotional life, so he was already feeling the pressure. Again, I don't forcefully pressure anyone, but they feel the pressure of my words from the show with a strange type of embodiment when I arrive in person. It scared him, so he sabotaged me. The same happened with Brian Fuller. Ultimately, it's very difficult for me to talk about these things. Society has an unwritten rule that abuse must be kept silent, and I'm not willing to cooperate in that regard. There's no reason for abuse, and it's absolutely unacceptable. Sometimes the victims of these things go under in silence because they have no support, and I recently found myself in that place. Most people will feel badly about the abuse. Almost nobody will actually speak in support of you, though. If your pet lizard named Gary dies, people will console you, but if your life was destroyed by abuse, they will almost certainly offer silence and, at best, have you in their thoughts. Sometimes that's okay, but as a person who spent the better part of 6 years fostering a community of many thousands of listeners across millions of downloads on this podcast, I had hoped for a more vocal response in support of me. I would never expect anyone to approach the abusers in any way. The only thing I've sought is the support that I've given for so long from the other end on an emotional level. Yet, I've been mostly ignored, and it sucks. Abuse victims, more than any other, suffer alone and in silence. Why? Well, the quick answer to that is, throughout history, abuse has always been conducted by those with leverage to get away with it, or the powerful. So there has always been fear of retaliation for speaking of abuse. If you're a victim, and as an observer, the same goes. You stay quiet. Even though we no longer live in a society that demands this type of practice, it still occurs due to tradition and, mainly, the fear of retribution, even if those fears are unfounded. So it's been mostly silent for me, and even when I have desperately cried out for the sense of community I offered, I received nothing but silence. You have to understand how much it hurts to build something behind certain principles and then see them abandoned in your time of need. I definitely felt betrayed by a lot of people. Yet I can't point a finger at anyone else but myself, because there's no other way out of this situation but my own will. I understand why many have remained silent. I hope to change that fact. But in the meantime, I am 100% allowed to be angry about being left alone in a circumstance where I built a community around these things. If I lash out about it with harsh words while others watch from the comfort of silence, it's not an indication that I have a mental health issue requiring immediate help. To the contrary, when people are challenged for their silence, they will often project your anger back at you as the need for something called help, which equates to taking the problem behind closed doors in more silence and paying for the help with someone you don't know so that you will no longer burden anybody you know with the need to change. I should be angry. I should receive reciprocal emotional support. But I should also let it go, because that isn't something that will happen overnight or even at all for me. I will fight for it, but silence will persist, and those benefits will only come to bear in the future for others. However, someday, people will actually freely exchange the words, "I'm sorry about the abuse you suffered," in the same way they show empathy for your lizard Gary. A dead hamster receives more empathy than I do today, but if this is the challenge I've been given, I will definitely accept it. So if I've offended anybody along the way, I apologize for my insensitivity, but the truth has always been that these cruel abuses destroyed my life. I need that to be recognized. It left me bitter and broken. In the time I was supposed to initially be working on my animation project, I was instead recovering from abuse. While Brian Fuller and Dan Harmon were introducing new shows, I was left in a pit of darkness with no way out but the healing of time. I never got the new show or the writing job. They did. Just imagine how you would feel if these guys destroyed your life and got rewarded for it while you suffered. I've been left to cope with that reality, and it's only strengthened my resolve to be a better version of the person they took from me, to rise from the ashes. I have never been fazed by the sting of rejection, but rampant, prolonged abuse ultimately brought me to my knees. So as I write this, I've been homeless since the latter part of August and unable to find work. I've been working tirelessly to find a job and have interviewed with some great companies and for positions I really want, but having a murder podcast at the top of my resume is a lot to overcome. I'm usually not there to get the job, but seemingly just to fill out the candidate pool because I have the right qualifications. Do I think this effort will pay off and ultimately result in getting a job? Yes, of course. The rejections will end at some point. And behind the scenes, people are doing their best to keep me afloat, if only just barely. If you want to know where I am mentally, I truly have no reason to hide that answer. I work nonstop to find a job, and I have a significant amount of material written for a new podcast, along with a new logo. it's going to focus on how we're made, specifically things that help us rise from the places where we're stuck, even if it's rock bottom like me. I'll talk about my own weird evolutionary structures, along with familiar and popular mindset topics. It will be a scrapbook of material designed to expand your perspective and even sometimes speak to your unconscious mind where those odd structures are familiar. Other topics will be down to earth and relatable, but for the meantime, the only true crime I'm planning to do is the remaining case requests from my Patreon listeners. I'm sure you can understand that, as a homeless person, my daily life brings me in close proximity to people who are either on the verge of going off a metaphorical cliff, or have already fallen. Examining murders and disappearances while I'm turning to dust is awful. So, I'll just do more of what I do best, absent dead bodies. For now. I still have a true crime animation project in the works, something that has been delayed for the reasons already discussed, but I've been studying very hard recently and have gotten back on track in a way that I've decided my long-term goal is to become either a 3D modeler or animator. It really suits my skill set very well. I just love to build things and even behavior, as you know. It was hard to find my passion for it in my misery, but I have it now. I'd like to gain a good amount of proficiency at each discipline before deciding which way to take my education further. But for now, it feels great to move ahead. I'm excited about what the future holds for that project and my goals in general. The animation pairs really well with my writing, and it should work out great. One of the most difficult parts of this process, meaning being homeless and directionless because you're without resources, is figuring out where to go next. When people destroy your dreams, you find yourself turning in circles, unsure of your next move, and indulging more things related to survival than attempting to thrive. That desire to thrive, however, returns as you heal and allows that multitude of uncertain directions to become a focused, singular path. And I'm arriving there now. It's been a lot of hard work. Of course, there are also bad days, days when I want to give up because being homeless is dreadful and tiring. I'm a dead man walking. It feels like everybody cares about the survival of your embodiment, but is numb to the plight of your emotional suffering. They indulge the fascination of watching you circle the drain over and over, yet suddenly panic when you're about to go down it. Sometimes it's difficult to reconcile the notion of people being so afraid of what they don't understand that they'll love your body, but not your mind. It takes an enormous amount of energy to remain focused and positive, and sometimes there's an emotional toll to pay. Some days are okay. Some days are not. When you're left in a state of fear that each day could be your last if anything goes wrong, you obviously realize that any long-term plan to maintain your mental health and improve your situation is going to be dependent upon getting back into stable, consistent housing that's accompanied by work. That's what I need now. In the meantime, I'm climbing a slippery slope. The weather is getting cold and rainy where I am, and well, if I had enough of anything, I wouldn't be homeless. But what I really need right now is a boost to get off the streets and into an affordable apartment, along with the ability to cover basic needs. Obviously, if you have a job to offer, I'm more than happy to hear about what it is and ready to work, but most people don't have that capability, so I'm not going to make any assumptions on that account. Things have been really bad for me the past few years, and it happened at a time when it seemed the future was so bright. The real difference between the two is that the bright part, the rise, was during the promises the abusers made, and the downfall occurred when their lies destroyed me. When big people knock you down, sometimes you hit the ground so hard or go into a hole so deep that it takes the work of a team to save your ass. That happened to me. And while there certainly have been a few generous people who tried and are still trying to get me back up the hill, the truth is that we need more people behind this effort. We must become as big and powerful as the people who pushed me down that same hill to the bottom. It isn't easy. It's embarrassing to have to ask. But more than anything, it's true, and I have nowhere else to turn to find the strength of this audience. There are so many of you, even on a bad day, and there is only one of me. I know times are tough. Trust me, I'm feeling it firsthand. But for anyone who has something to give and would like to participate, the links to both my PayPal account and the Patreon account for Cold Case Murder Mysteries are in the show notes. The help I desperately need is your compassion and support. Those things are magical for me. It's why I made a show aimed at offering the same, despite its flaws. It's why I invited you along for the ride. Anyhow, I'll update you on the release of the new podcast, and in the meantime, give some thought to supporting this cause and making it a success story. I'm always okay with being the person who speaks up. I'm always okay with being the face of rebellion. So if I'm going to receive silence, let's make it silence backed by enough action to empower me in those pursuits so that I might not feel alone in this fight against evil. I still want to find my version of success. It's waiting beyond this barrier, and I'm going to smash right through that fucking thing like a freight train. So check out those links below in the show notes and pretend that I look like a basket of puppies with a bow on top. Until then, whether you celebrate or not, I wish you the best heading into this holiday season, and hope the new year manifests all your dreams. Talk to you soon.